Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Friday. Andy Kamenetsky here. And coming up, Brian and I are going to be talking with Locked On Nets co-host Adam Arbrecht in a crossover episode where we compare and contrast the state of the Lakers and the Nets, two of the most scrutinized, high-profile, and chaotic franchises over the last several seasons in the NBA, what they have in common, what makes them very different. General note, this show was recorded before the Nets announced their suspension of at least five games for Kyrie Irving, but the conversation still holds either way, and we think you guys are going to dig it.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, so depending on who introduced you to which show, you are now here, though, with all three of us, Locked On Nets, Locked On Lakers, sans Doug Norrie, obviously, Andy and Brian Kamenetsky. I always butcher your guys'
last name. No, you're good. That was it. That was perfect. Woo!
All right, never mind. I take nothing. I make no concessions here, which maybe is apropos for a little bit of discussion we're going to have here. We're going to obviously get into just the Lakers and the Nets and their season. That was the intention here. But as Andy and I were discussing before we started, this was a plan that I put in place a week ago. Boy, life comes at you fast, eh, friends? Because since then, Kyrie Irving has obviously been under an enormous level of scrutiny, rightfully so, for first posting a link to a movie based off of a book that is essentially not only disinformation, but also heavily anti-Semitic. He responded to that with only Kyrie-like responses, which were, I don't know why people are concerned about what I post. I both wield and do not wield any power. I cannot be anti-Semitic, as most recently as today, we're recording this on Thursday, said I cannot be anti-Semitic based on where I come from and what my beliefs are. Those are hard responses to take.
Plus, Adam, he didn't make the documentary.
Also true, which he noted, yeah.
Yes. And I mean, to be fair, that is comforting.
It would be worse
if he made the documentary. I mean, it would be worse.
So to be 100% clear, as I completely bogart the top of this show, we're going to talk about purely basketball stuff for the majority of this episode so that Nets and Lakers fans alike can enjoy it. But just from an outside perspective, because we have all crossed over together before, we've communicated before, I respect both of you guys in the way that you cover the sport and then just some of the narratives that go beyond it. Did you have an instant perspective on this as it all started to unfold? Do you find it incredibly troubling that the NBA seem to take a great deal of time reacting to it, knowing that there is a scheduled conversation between Adam Silver and Kyrie coming up later this week?
I mean, as far as the way Kyrie's handling it, it's exactly how I thought he would handle it. I tweeted out Wednesday at Cam Brothers after Kyrie and the Nets put out that statement in which a lot of people noted that Kyrie did not apologize. And in an instance like this, where you know people are looking for an apology, even if you're not genuinely sorry, the PR thing is to do an apology, even if it's mealy-mouthed. So not apologizing is a very specific choice. And I tweeted out, do I think Kyrie's sorry? No, but proof one way or another won't come through a statement co-written by his bosses, but rather the first time he takes questions and the next time he tries to show us he's more enlightened than the rest of us, because there will be a next time. And as it turns out, he killed two birds with one stone, because the next time he took questions and the next time he tried to show he was more enlightened than the rest of us came in the same session, you know, 12 hours after the statement or whatever. So it's not surprising. And to be honest, if Kyrie's not sorry, don't apologize. Like, I don't want an apology with a gun to his head, because that doesn't mean anything. But to your point, though, Adam, what really matters is how the league goes about handling this. Because to put it kindly, they've dropped the ball.
And, you know, Brian, we also heard that it was lag time from the Brooklyn Nets as well, because they waited, got in touch with the ADL, and most people speculated it was, what does the blowback look like? If we do nothing, how will you respond to this? And even though raising funds to help the Anti-Defamation League and their efforts is a positive thing, it does have a little bit of so how much money do we need to throw at this so that it doesn't really come back against us? And as we know, Brooklyn has a large Jewish community. So there are these colliding elements here. Do you feel like right now, because we can even take it just beyond Kyrie, there's also the Josh Primo situation that's unfolding with San Antonio Spurs, which looks about as terrible and unfolding more terribly than it even felt like initially. Does it feel like the NBA is kind of having one of those starts to a league season where they've got a lot of stuff to sort out, coming off of a couple of years where it felt like they were on the front foot of so many social issues and so many concerns that people, individuals, and players were bringing up?
Well, I think that gets to like the challenge that the NBA faces, because what they have here is it's not Donald Sterling, you know, with, you know, the Magic Johnson stuff and V.
No, they just went through that with Robert Sarver.
Right. It's, you know, but what they have is are sort of complex problems where, you know, Adam Silver on Thursday made it very clear, you know, he wishes the Nets, you know, sort of, he was unsatisfied with Kyrie's apology and statement, and by proxy, by the reaction of the Nets. But I this is one of those times where I am reminded that the league works for the owners. It's not the other way around. And, you know, what does Adam Silver do when Kyrie amplifies something that he shouldn't be amplifying, that is abhorrent in so many ways, but you know, is complex in terms of what Kyrie is doing. Like, I don't think Kyrie Irving is anti-Semitic in like a school ties kind of way, to go back to that movie. Like, you know, like what he's doing here is different, you know, than that sort of classic, you know, anti-Jew rhetoric. It's different. He's trying to achieve some sort of enlightenment. He's looking at his heritage. He's doing a lot of stuff and is running into his own sort of intellectual ego in the process. And I think the league is just sitting there going, what exactly do we do about this when a player, what Pandora's box are we opening up? What precedents are we opening up? And, you know, what happens when the Nets hire Ime Udoka? Like, what do we do about that? Like, the Celtics obviously made a choice here. And then the Nets turn around and hire the guy weeks after the Celtics basically, you know, ran him off. And they, you know, probably only didn't fire him for legal reasons, to make sure that they had every I dotted and every T crossed. And then the Nets turn around and hire him. So I think
it might have done this in the hopes that maybe somebody would hire him.
Maybe, but I
leaving think that option open.
Yeah,
maybe, but I'm sure they're happy. Look, they didn't argue about, they didn't ask for compensation. They were happy to let, I mean,
you
Nets
could argue that the Celtics actually, their behavior in this, or sort of their own morality, was compromised, because if they really wanted Udoka to feel the punishment that they doled out, they would say, no, you can't just give him another job. We are not acquiessing to this.
Right. Year from now, you can re-enter the market potentially.
My only point is like that, but that opens up potential league. Like, there is a limit as to what the league can really do in these situations to control teams, to control players, to do all of these things. And I think we came through that stretch, Adam, that you talked about, the sort of idealized version of what we want, you know, what many people, not everybody, but what many people would love the league to be from a social justice standpoint, from an equity standpoint. And what we're finding is it's still a corporate entity with 30 separate bosses to the guy in the center who is, you know, we like to think runs it, but actually works for those owners.
Yeah, and we see this across most sports as well, right? Roger Goodell is the lightning rod for fans to dump all of their hate and anger and rage about whatever issue it may be. Meanwhile, he is just the guy that is trying to navigate the expectations of the owners of the league. Not to say that they don't have their own set of control there. To tie this into the Lakers, though, coming into this year, the Lakers turned over their head coach. They have a disgruntled player on their team in Russell Westbrook, or at least have a issue with a player that is on their team.
At times they seem like they have a disgruntled player in LeBron.
100%. And by the way, at the highest possible level, which I think is what matters most here, right? Because you can go to the third or fifth most important player on a team and say, okay, you may not be mostly satisfied, but you don't matter as much, so your concerns don't matter as much, which is also true. But to compare these things, because the one thing with Kyrie Irving, which, you know, ultimately we often say, I think that Kyrie Irving perceives himself to be something that he maybe is not truly. And that is this level of enlightenment or level of educated or level of voice around certain things. It doesn't mean that sometimes, not this instance, he can communicate things genuinely about a given topic or social issue. Then there are a myriad of times when he seems to misstep, and in this particular instance, seems to make an egregious mistake that he's unwilling to acknowledge fully or fully take responsibility for. Unlike even a disgruntled LeBron James, who I think by and large, at least from afar, I've always perceived to be a thoughtful individual when it comes to topics that arise around the league, and genuinely seems to be on the right side is the wrong way to phrase it, but seems to be on the progressive side of a discussion. Does that seem like a fair assessment from the outside for the Lakers, and why, even in a tumultuous last year and a half for them in a lot of ways, their face of their franchise is a fairly reliable member of that organization? And if I'm judging by facial expressions, I could be off base here a little bit. It seems like they're.
No, I'm just thinking. I'm trying to.
I never thought about it quite the way you're putting it. Mm.
Good. It's hard hitting.
I think here's what I would say: that a big difference between LeBron and Kyrie is, does LeBron always hold himself accountable in every single instance where accountability could be warranted? No. I mean, he clearly has, not that you'd necessarily expect a player to do this because it just opens such a Pandora's box and of weirdness, but, you know, let's just say he hasn't said my bad for the whole Russ thing. You know,
he's sort of memory hold his right. role in the fact that Russ is here to begin with.
Or you could get to a few years ago with the situation with Daryl Morey and the tweet with Hong Kong and LeBron taking questions about the relationship between the league in China and Nike in China, where, you know, which has LeBron linked in the middle of all of this. And, you know, his answers in the moment were surprisingly clumsy for somebody who's typically quite good at this stuff. And
that's true. Maybe one of the first instances where he seemed.
I remember
confused about which way to go with it.
Yeah. Well, there was one point where he said that he didn't know enough about this, which I don't buy, but I actually asked him directly, do you plan on trying to learn more? And he dodged the question. And, you know, and to be fair to LeBron, I think he became the face of this in ways that are not entirely fair anyway. But a big difference, though, I would say, between LeBron and Kyrie is LeBron is not somebody who goes out of his way to double and triple down as a matter of principle. I would say that's maybe the biggest difference in terms of where either one of them will end up if there are uncomfortable moments. Well,
I would say, to me, I think, you know, I agree with you, Andy. I mean, I mean, there are obvious differences in the sense that, you know, LeBron is not, you know, a rabbit hole conspiracy theorist, which, you know, is at the root of what is animating a lot of what Kyrie and all these sort of quasi intellectual baggage that goes along with that. I think LeBron is more willing to take accountability, not all the time, and nobody's perfect. I mean, I think we like to hold people to you're strong here, but what about that? Like, as if you're supposed to be perfect on every issue, and that's not fair to anybody. But LeBron is much more willing to take accountability than Kyrie, who clearly wants all the ability to provoke and all the ability to be smarter and wiser than everyone, but none of the accountability that comes with anything that he says. And so, but I think the biggest difference is, or at least one of the biggest differences is, there's no sense that the other things that LeBron does, whether it's business, whether it's social justice issues, whether it's the work he's doing in Akron to build schools or and all of those things, are more important to him than basketball, are more important to him than his obligations to the team, to the league, to the Lakers. Where I think with Kyrie, there is every sense that this stuff that he finds more important and more enlightened, and those aspects of him that he believes are whatever, more enlightened to use that again, might actually be more important than the basketball. And it might be more important to him. And
I don't think there's any might. I've said many times, he does not want to play basketball full time.
And so you're dismissive. You're dismissive of topics
that he wants to explore in his life.
I don't even say that with judgment. Don't want to play, if basketball doesn't hold the same interest to him that it did 6 or 7 years ago, that's fine. It's a problem, though, if you're his employer running a basketball team,
Right. The Lakers have no reason to believe that LeBron isn't interested in the best possible performance on the court or having the, you know, steering the team to the best possible result, passive aggressive stuff that he does aside. And I think that's a significant difference between the two of them.
All right. So in a second here, let's turn our attention more fully into basketball. Obviously, if you're looking for a deeper coverage around the Kyrie Irving situation, Locked On Nets podcast, we will be having plenty of content around this as it continues to unfold and what remains. Wouldn't you know it, another tumultuous season for the Brooklyn Nets. But I do have a question that I want to pose to the fine Locked On Lakers fellows. Right after I tell you, though, about our friends over at Prize Picks, because my goodness, if you were wondering what is it all about when you want to not get into that day-to-day trying to go up against all the big sharks and you want to make a little bit of fun there, you want to throw a couple shekels down, bottom line is here's how it works. Prize Picks. Pick 2 to 5 players, and if they score more or less than the Prize Picks line, you can win up to 10 times your money on a single entry. It's no competing against other players. It's just you versus the projections available. Prize Picks offers projections not just for the NBA, but also NFL, MLB, NHL, college football for crying out loud, men's college basketball, women's college basketball. Think about it. If it's a sport, you can go on Prize Picks and you can go ahead and get up against those projections rather than taking on a pool of who knows whateries that may be working some sleight of hand there to try to get the edge. You know that it's going to be safe and fast withdrawals as well, and entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. You go ahead and you download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com and sign up and play daily fantasy sports. First time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match on up to $100 when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. If you deposit $100, they're going to match you with $100. You deposit $50, they give you $50. You can do the math on that. It's pretty straightforward. Don't forget, though, enter the promo code Locked On at sign up for an instant deposit match of up to $100 with Prize Picks. Okay, fellas, real quick here. I do want to talk about the way the seasons have started for both these teams. What the outlook is, obviously very bright in Brooklyn. But would you be any interest out there in reuniting Kyrie Irving with LeBron James? Do we think maybe?
Oh, who all of a sudden loves the idea of Russell Westbrook on their team?
Yeah, what's $47 million between friends, guys?
The Nets could use a sixth man
of the year. Right.
That sounded all too synchronized there to not think that maybe you guys haven't had some discussions.
Well, look, Kyrie is still, up until, you know, a week ago, was the most prominent name that people talked about with free agency and this plan B that the Lakers have of if you don't make a trade for involving Westbrook this year. It's with the idea that you were going to go into the summer with cap space that you could use to sign someone that you could use to trade into. And Kyrie Irving is the name at the top of the list because there's certainly every indication that he might not have much of a future in Brooklyn. I think at this point, no. For all kinds of reasons, but like it's, I don't even want to say the least of which is the anti-Semitic, you know, the promotion of the anti-Semitic film. There's just too much there. And I think the Lakers, the notion that you would commit, tens of millions of dollars and more importantly, years to Kyrie in this offseason is mind-boggling to me. Look, a lot can happen between now and then. And there's all kinds of image rehab that can be done and things the Lakers can say and do and things Kyrie can say and do to try to make everybody pretend that this wasn't a thing and that ultimately, because they believe they want the player in the same way that the Nets will come up with something to say about Ime Udoka and vetting and feeling comfortable and all of these things because they believe he's the coach out there that can help them win fastest and they don't care about the other stuff. And so maybe that will be what the Lakers do. But no, I think is the short answer there.
Because I was going to say, are the Lakers desperate enough with LeBron James being there, right? It feels like every year with LeBron James is a desperate year because we know that he's older and you want to maximize his value. And obviously he wants to always be winning. Are they desperate enough where knowing that you actually could trade for Kyrie Irving, and not have to commit to him long term. You know, you could just take the storm for this year and improve your chances. I tend to think that it'd be a hard choice for an organization to make in this moment right now. But a month from now, right, a month and a half from now, you know, when the deadline comes up.
Adam, what you're talking about, Andy, is what Andy and I kind of half jokingly referred to as, and I know there are people out in sort of Lakers Nation, as the anti-Semitism discount. Like, you're taking advantage of where Kyrie is to be able to trade Westbrook and give up less. Yep. You know, like you do the rental thing knowing that he's a distressed asset, but he's a distressed asset for reasons that ought not be tolerable to the organization. But Andy, I mean,
and just a month ago, this was a player and a team in the Nets who said, we're never taking Russell Westbrook off your hands. You need to give us more draft capital here. And by the way, just to be clear, I understand the ickiness of having a discussion around what's going on with Kyrie and then saying, so where's his trade value at, right? But we also understand that this is what the NBA is. There are teams that have already...
I mean, it's a conversation. Yeah. It's a conversation because it's part of what do the Nets do next?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because their choices are either trade him if you can, waive him, or pretend none of this is happening and keep him on the court, like even after a suspension or whatever.
It does seem like they were willing to do a little bit of pretend it's not happening. That seemed to be their first move, was maybe we act like this isn't as big a deal as it is.
And I mean,
look, unfortunately, Kyrie has, you know, kept it in the spotlight.
Yeah, he has. And his, you know, again, his post written statement media session could not have gone any worse. I mean, Brian knows this because we talked about it all last offseason. We've talked about it even during the season. I believe you and I have talked about this, Adam, in different crossovers. I would have traded in the offseason Russ for Kyrie straight up, because you're basically just trading problem for problem. Would I have attached a pick to Russ? Maybe. Would have never done two. And among the reasons I would have never done two is, I think any team who ever decides to get into a long-term commitment with Kyrie Irving is out of their bleeping mind. I can't put it any more succinctly. It's an absolutely foolish thing to be doing. But to the other question about the Lakers' desperation, in certain respects, the answer is, well, Russ is still on the team. They've had opportunities to move him. You know, they could have moved him for Kyrie, like we talked about. They could have moved him for various members of the Utah Jazz poo-poo platter. They clearly could move him for...
We have to stop calling him that, because the Utah Jazz poo-poo platter is like the second best record in the Western Conference.
It's a tasty poo-poo platter. That is true. One tasty platter. If that's poo-poo.
We owe the poo-poo platter an apology.
Well, I was going to say, actually, an apology. Poo-poo platter, which I believe may have been originated by Zach Lowe, just as a way of describing, like, if you've never had the poo-poo platter,
right?
It's a bunch of different stuff, like different dim sum, different. Right. It's basically the whole kitchen sink. The reality is, as a dish, the poo-poo platter is pretty good.
It's quite tasty.
It's P-U-P-U, not P-O-O-P-O-O. But, you know, they could have moved Russ by now. If they were that desperate to do something, they'd have already moved him. So I think the answer to your question is, maybe they want to try to leverage the Nets situation, I guess, but I wouldn't necessarily call that desperation or 100% desperation, because they would actually be in a position of advantage. I still don't think they'll do it, though.
Yeah, and there's an analog here in LA, I think, and it's not completely apples to apples, but acquiring distressed assets at what seemed like a bargain price, because the asset is distressed for some really bad reasons. And that's the Dodgers with Trevor Bauer. And beyond the fact that it literally didn't work, like, on the field, the reaction to that move, I think, was very much not worth it for the Dodgers. And I don't think the Lakers would go there. I don't think they should go there. Because I also don't think it's in the long-term interest of the franchise.
So Lakers will trade for Kyrie Irving. Let's keep this conversation going here in a second. So the other thing then that I was curious about was, again, seemingly in the offseason, both these franchises seemed in somewhat similar states. Now, the Nets stuck with their head coach for 7 more games, but the Lakers made a switch at head coach, gets in the door, and the first thing he says is, don't you worry about Russ, you know, Westbrook. I've got a plan. Why did that crumble so quickly? I mean, it seemed like a good selling point if the idea was you had an understanding that Westbrook was going to buy into that. Now, I've seen interviews from afar after the first couple of games and some real, what we would expect, clunker shooting performances from Westbrook, where he seems to be saying what's in the best interest of the team, like that he's on board with it, but that can also just be because he understands where the state of his value is around the league and the money that he's making. Did the Lakers have a clear plan coming into this year, or was it kind of another, let's see what happens and we'll make our assessments on the fly?
I think Russ has responded well to Darvin and clearly has a level of respect for Darvin Ham that he did not have for Frank Vogel. Mm-hmm. Darvin Ham is somebody that exudes credibility and he exudes gravitas. And as I often like to say, once you've been shot in the face, you are no longer afraid of Russell Westbrook. It's an old saying, but I think it's always a dangerous game to try to gauge Russell Westbrook's self-awareness, but he may recognize that if he's seen as somebody that refuses to adjust at all on the heels of the disastrous first season he had with the Lakers, there's a good chance he could be out of the league, right. Like a really good chance. So Russ may recognize this from a career preservation standpoint. You know, it's also felt too like the when is this going to happen has been weighing on the whole team, weighing on Darvin, but also weighing on Russ, like just sort of waiting for it. Mm-hmm. And then it finally happened. And I think sort of everybody has been able to move forward, you know, it being playing off the bench.
Right. We talked about this on Thursday's show. Like there's an element of bleep you that Russ can do to all the doubters and the haters and whatever. And like Russ needs a chip on his shoulder. Like this, he is motivated by that. He is a guy who has been fueled by these sorts of things. And everybody's, oh, he's not going to come off the bench. He's going to blow the whole thing up. Lakers just send him home before and just get it over with and not even like give him a chance to try to play the role. And I think part of what you're seeing here, and we saw it, you know, the way he answered questions after Wednesday's game and all this stuff is like, he's just as edgy, just as combative. He's not, you know, he didn't turn himself into like Dwight Howard, who went from like heel to like cuddly, lovable guy again, like in his second stint in LA and, you know, reborn and all that. I think he's doing, whether it's out of spite, whether it's whatever, this is what he's going to be. As long as he is playing well, as long as I think the narrative around him is constructive, I think if the response from fans is good, and it has been, I mean, Lakers fans want anything positive to cheer for, I think this is what you're going to get. I mean, like, I am fascinated by where these teams are, because the Lakers can't score but have like the third best defense in the league. The Nets, again, middle of the pack offensively, which is weird given who they have, and they're just a catastrophically bad defensively. Like, well, how these teams got here in terms of like deconstructing culture, deconstructing rosters, doing all this stuff. It's like the Nets have been trying to hold my beer, the Lakers, after every bad move that LA has made.
It's interesting you say that, Brian and Adam. This swings back to when you reached out to us last week about doing this crossover, because the idea basically just being two organizations in chaos. Let's have a chat. And you know, not that two wins in a row has all of a sudden fixed the Lakers, but they don't seem like they're in the exact same place right now. And I think it highlights, though, a big difference that's always been there this season, or really the last few seasons with the Lakers and the Nets, as rudderless and badly run and at times very tense and, you know, a lot of tension that has existed within the Lakers. They have not been an organization of toxicity. No. There's not been a toxic environment. Even when things were bad with Westbrook, like as bad as they've gotten, it didn't feel like the entire organization had developed this just ambiance of toxicity. It just felt like there's a bad thing going right now between a high profile player in the organization. The Nets have been increasingly toxic, and Brian mentioned culture. it wasn't that long ago that the Nets were considered an incredible culture.
Well, it was the culture that got Durant to want to come there.
Well, and it's insane to think that, say, LeBron James and Anthony Davis, right, the two best players for the Lakers, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, that is the big difference, is that you have two guys that, for whatever's going wrong with L.A., they're still really good when they're on the court together and they're healthy and they're playing, and they're not causing some of the issues like demanding a trade or demanding people be fired or everything that Kyrie Irving brings along with it. And just to your point about the culture piece, it's insane. Wacky, wild, waving, flailed just tube men.
All of this.
And it's crazy to think that Sean Marks is both the architect of the reconstruction and of the culture of the Nets to make them attractive for superstars, and has also been at the helm as this thing has been crumbling down around them. And it just, I think, again, speaks to, and we said this back way back when they got them and over these last couple of years, how they said, well, you need, this is what happens when you get superstar talent. You have to be willing and understanding you're going to acquiesce to their needs, to their wants and their desires. And in some ways, maybe the Nets organization didn't realize fully that that was going to be a part of this process. However, more critical than any of that is which superstars. Right. Which are the superstars that you do have to acquiesce to, even if it's LeBron James? And yes, sometimes he's going to push the button for certain players to be brought in that don't ultimately pan out. Okay. But you still know you have LeBron James with consistency. If Anthony Davis is healthy, you know what you have in those players. Kevin Durant, technically, you can make that statement around. You know what you have with him when he shows up, and he always does show up. But that's the thin line to me about going in on these. Or Dame Lillard in Portland, I think we talked about him last time we connected, Andy, of, hey, listen, whatever he is or is not as a player unto himself, he's never been a problem for the organization. It almost made it easy to give him that much extra money and keep him around. And now look, we found a way. We've rounded ourselves into a team that might be high-level competitive around him. Those are the margins that you're dancing in, and the Nets have not had that ability to do so.
Well, you mentioned Dame. And in talking about LeBron, and I think this is another really big difference between the Lakers and the Nets with where they are right now, as much as he can be passive aggressive, as much as he can be a little bit, what have you done for me lately? You know, he's known for ratcheting up demands and trying to apply that type of pressure. And his first season with the Lakers, I thought his leadership was pretty abysmal. When he is engaged, and that has been most of his time with the Lakers, he is among the best leaders in the league, as is Damian Lillard, which made me think about this in the first place. They are true leaders. Kevin Durant, as great as he is, has never been thought of as a really good locker room team leader. Certainly Kyrie Irving has never been that way. James Harden has never been that way. Ben Simmons has never been that way. Yep. And when you know, there have been, I've recently heard some people covering the Clippers wondering if you have a bit of that issue with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. Like, you need, if you're going to be hunting superstars and letting superstars create your culture, at least one of them has to be an established leader with credentials and a track record for doing it. And the Lakers have that with LeBron. It's not always perfect, but you know that it's there. And I think that's one of the mistakes that the Nets have made in allowing Durant and Kyrie to just completely revamp their culture in, you know, to their liking. It's always being done with no accountability or leadership whatsoever.
And you can even make the case, too, that as much as we at least gave some level of understanding to the idea of the circumstances that Steve Nash was in, appointing a first-time head coach, coming right from being a player to being a coach and not having any experience or not necessarily having the ability to set forth whatever standard or expectations, right? Vogel, while no longer the Lakers coach, at least brought a track record himself to that situation, and you would think brought value to that room, whereas we know Steve Nash, value for seven games, and then no longer. That being the case, go ahead, Brian.
I was just going to ask you guys both, and I know we're running low on time, but like I wanted to ask you guys both, like obviously we're heading into the weekend. Things feel better around the Lakers. You know, two wins, as Andy said before, don't solve everything. A lot of their problems are still their problems, but there's a feeling that, okay, at least there's a way for this Westbrook thing to not be a disaster. He seems to be potentially an effective sixth man. Darvin's controlling those minutes. He's willing to play him, sit him as needed. And Westbrook, even if it's double middle fingers, seems willing to play the role for a while.
Wins matter, by the way. Nets fans want to raise a banner after beating the Pacers on that second of the back-to-back there with them.
You win two in a row. Does, you know, Matt Ryan, you know, save the season, and that win, you know, there's at least a feeling that, okay, it's getting a little bit better. If they could score consistently, the defense is there, and so on and so on. The flip side is you write the rosters down on, you know, on a pure talent level. I have underestimated whether it's Kendrick Nunn, whether it's Jamal Murray, whether it's Ben Simmons, the impact of missing an entire year of basketball. But I still believe that Ben Simmons is an excellent player. And in game 50, this is going to look much different, or could. So you have Kyrie, you have Durant, you have Ben Simmons. You know, Joe Harris is theoretically going to get healthy, and TJ Warren is theoretically going to get healthy. And the roster that Brooklyn's working with still on paper is very good. Or could be 30, 40 games from now. The Lakers roster that they're working with is still very problematic. So when you guys look forward, projecting 65 games into the season, where do you think this is? Like, are the Nets still going to be better off than the Lakers? Or does what we see now with all the other stuff that is clearly problematic, does that kind of sink them in a way that it might not sink the Lakers, you know, who just have regular old roster problems?
It's funny that you bring it up, because coming into this season, we were making the case with the addition of Royce O'Neal, right? Nicholas Claxton's taking this next step. Whenever Ben Simmons gets his legs fully underneath him, even a guy I was very high on signing, Yuta Watanabe, and that looks like that's panning out. This is arguably, with Seth Curry and everyone being healthy, the best version of the Brooklyn Nets roster that they've had in the Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving era. Best top to bottom roster they've had. However, 65 games from now, I don't know how this right now plays out. I don't think that we're fully out of the weeds on the Kyrie Irving situation. I mean, we're obviously not out of the weeds. We're in the thick of it right now. I don't know how it gets resolved, though. There's been some speculation around, what is Ime Udoka, who has a strong relationship by all accounts with Kevin Durant, but is not necessarily the type of coach with the type of personality that will mesh well with Kyrie Irving. Like, I don't know if this thing and this hiring of Ime is so much about doing whatever you can to save this season, or saying, his off the court issues aside, that over a year ago, we should have parted ways with Steve Nash, elevated Ime, who has connections with Ben Simmons from his time in Philadelphia, has connections with Sean Marks from his time in San Antonio, that we missed the boat there. And we're going to give this guy a second chance. And then we're going to see what happens. And if you're Kevin Durant and you came into this offseason first demanding a trade, then demanding people to be fired because you didn't want to go through another bad experience, name a worse experience than what's happening right now. And I don't know if 20 games from now, depending on what the record looks like, that he won't be singing the same song, maybe justifiably. Hey, what does the market look like for me? I don't know if I want to stay here and be a part of this. So, the Lakers, to me, are unquestionably at least going in a better direction from a consistency standpoint. There it is.
How do you like us now?
And it should be. And to everything you mentioned about Westbrook and what he needs to do for himself, right, for his own career beyond the Lakers, there should be value there. And there's no reason, when you look at the Western Conference, to say, by the time we get to the deadline, the Lakers are going to be in position to say, can we make a little tweak here? Can we do a little something and be a playoff team? Which ultimately, I think in the short term for them, that was the biggest goal. Still be competitive, still be a playoff team. And next offseason, when you move off of Westbrook, then you can reassess how you want to build around LeBron and AD.
Look, man, at the end of the day, Lakers exceptionalism is a thing. Nets exceptionalism doesn't exist. It's really that simple.
No, there's exceptionalism, exceptionally dysfunctional. That counts. You can't tie that word in there without making it official. Listen, hopefully for Lakers fans, this was still an enjoyable episode, even if just from the standpoint, as I know fans like to do, get to look across the country and say, what a mess. Thankfully, it's not us. We appreciate, as always, for Locked On Lakers, Locked On Nets, obviously myself, Doug Norrie, who's taking a vacation for some insane reason, and the Kamenetsky brothers.
Run too lucky. Right. What a lucky time to be taking a vacation. Oh my God. Did he luck out?
You know, you're
not coming back. You know, he's not coming back.
Yeah, he's on sabbatical with an option to just decline. He may not return on the extension. Bottom line is, man, you follow the Locked On Lakers. You follow the Locked On Nets, obviously on the Locked On Podcast Network, on YouTube, on the podcast feeds. And I'm sure Maybe I'll make the choice if I want to do another crossover like this somewhere down the road in the season, depending on how things go. Gentlemen, always appreciate getting
Thanks, man.